Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
All right, we're back with Jim Spiotos. Jim, thank you for coming again. I really appreciate you taking your time.
It's my pleasure, Bruce.
Kind of off air, we were talking about the trustees' responsibility and their mandate. And one of the things that I was reading last night was the Board of Trustees' responsibility as it has to do with CalPERS. And I'm just going to read it because when I read it, I realized it sort of boxed them into something that seemed maybe so confining they might not be able to make the right decision. It says a trustee's primary duty of loyalty is to the beneficiaries of the trust. The trustee is under a duty to the beneficiary to administer the trust solely in the interest of the beneficiary. The trustee must not be guided by the interest of any third party. The unwavering duty of complete loyalty to the beneficiary of the trust must be to the exclusion of the interest of all other parties. And when I read that, I thought, okay, I could be a trustee, and I've been involved in running partnerships, let's say, for people's money, where the sole decision is mine. And there's times where I've made decisions that have, let's say, cut losses, but created a loss. But it was the best decision. And in a way, that's what I'm looking at. I guess I'm wondering if the math will not work for a lot of what we've promised. And if that's a fact, then the trustee's duty is to take into account the beneficiary's best interest and probably make a decision that they think might be breaking their promise as a trustee. What's your opinion of that?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes we forget that we view ourselves more as advocates for a position than the responsible adult in the room.
Yeah.
And by that I mean that in the truest sense of a fiduciary, it may be better to do what is sustainable and affordable over time than to buy into promises that can never be fulfilled. And one of the biggest challenges, I think, of people in connection with workers and their pensions and their future is that if you cost the municipality too much, you ultimately, just like Vallejo, see less employees and less benefits long term. If you work with the municipality to maximize its value and its taxpayers with good services, you will wind up with more people coming and more potential for the fulfillment of any promise that is made. Sometimes, especially for the younger workers, asking for too much now will lead to less for everyone later. And so all that has to be balanced. Aristotle used to say virtue was nothing in excess.
Mm-hmm.
And he called it made and gone, in the middle, so to speak. And that truly is sort of a guiding principle, I think, for fiduciaries. And one of the things to keep in mind is being a true supervising adult, so to speak, you know, the persons responsible, both on the municipal side and on the pension side, should be working together to make sure they can fulfill the long-term goals, not just the present or near-term payments.
When you have a three-year process plus for Vallejo, it seems like that probably didn't occur.
Well, you know, one of the problems, unfortunately, with Chapter 9, and that's why it's the last resort, it's been used so sparingly, is it's complicated, it is time-consuming, and it is very costly. And it's not predictable. So you may go in saying, I'm going to do this, but the pushes and shoves and demands may come out entirely differently.
Hmm. You mentioned something that's interesting. You have a city employee, and as I read the CalPERS document, it seems that it says that once a right is in place or a promise is in place, it's pretty much in place permanently for that person. And now, let's say as a new employee, I get hired and it's completely a different set of circumstances. Maybe I don't even have a defined benefit plan. Maybe I have a defined contribution plan and I'm sitting next to somebody that has all the goodies. I wonder if there's any ramifications for that, just hard feelings about, well, you guys have taken so much, there's nothing left.
Well, long term,
yeah,
the municipality, just like the state, is a sub-sovereign. It can pay or it could choose not to pay. Obviously, it could be sued for not paying. But if it doesn't have money to pay, it can't pay. So helping everybody has a vested interest, not only in their pension, but they, in another sense of the word vested, have a vested interest in making sure the municipality prospers and grows. And if you charge too much, we all know what happens, no matter what business or what municipality it is. If the prices are not sustainable and affordable, there will be less, and there will be pain suffered. So the real issue, and it's the younger worker and the future workers that are important to the future of the municipality. If you really want your pension paid and the promises kept or kept to the degree possible, the best thing to do is to help that municipality be very sustainable and affordable, and sometimes less may mean more. By asking for everything now, you may get far less and others may get nothing.
Well, I think you've just said something that's really key. Promises kept to the degree possible. So I haven't done the math, and I don't know that I would be capable of it, but are the promises that are in place keepable?
Well, I mean, depending upon the various calculations, if you look at state and local governments, various studies by various individuals say underfunding could be $1 trillion to $3 trillion.
That's probably...
Who knows if that's accurate, because investments and other, you know, imponderables may make it, you know, hard to calculate, but it could be a very large number.
And again, it doesn't seem like it has a way to, it's sort of like if you stop making a house payment, the lender has probably the recourse of going after the property and they'll sell it for X amount of dollars. But when you have the arrangement like a CalPERS, it does seem like that's a superior lien, that even if you can't pay it now, it'll hang around in first position forever.
Well, certainly, you know, one, no one likes to see any worker shorted.
No.
Because it's just not fair.
That's right.
At the same time, if we don't make the promises realistic, sustainable, and affordable, we're really doing a graver injustice. Because if we cost too much, the municipality will raise taxes. And we know from the city of Bridgeport in 1991, which had to raise taxes to balance their budget because of state law, you raise the taxes and taxpayers, corporate and individuals, leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have less tax revenue. So if you raise taxes more, more leave, and you create a death spiral. So what we need to do, and sometimes that's why it has to be restructured, and, you know, we talk about the rights of sovereigns. Obviously, you have contract rights, and you shouldn't impair them, but I think everyone recognizes that at times certain rights have to give way to the corporate, or in this case, the public good.
Mm-hmm.
And the public good here is to maintain the municipality and the essential governmental services. So sometimes we may have to adjust those, not because we want to cause pain to anyone, but we actually want to make sure that they get the most of the benefit of the bargain, rather than asking for too much now, which causes people to leave the municipality, and there's only less to pay in the future.
Okay, let's transition now to something that I know is being bantied about, and I think you were just asked to testify regarding the ability for a state, or the inability for a state, to declare bankruptcy. So is that something that at this point is not possible for a state? And do you see that and in any way changing?
Well, one, no state, with one exception, since the late 1800s, have defaulted on their general obligation bond. Arkansas had a problem in the Depression in 1933, but they refunded it promptly thereafter. So states have been a long history of paying their debts. States are sovereigns. If you tell a sovereign, you know, you can declare bankruptcy, that will create a presently the perception in the market is that states will pay their debts, they have traditionally, and they're a safe credit so they can borrow money at a low cost. If you add bankruptcy to it, there's a fear that if they now can file bankruptcy, maybe the risks are far greater than we thought, so we have to charge them more.
Mm-hmm.
We're back to the 3 percentage points more a year is 90% more over the term, and simple, and we, you and I, and everybody listening to this, are the taxpayers who pay that. So we want to keep those borrowing costs low. We want to keep the perception of credibility high. And so, therefore, I don't think bankruptcy does anything. The ability to declare bankruptcy doesn't give you one more dollar in taxes. In fact, it may cause people to charge you more because of the risk. The ability for a sovereign to say, I can go into this proceeding, is probably not as beneficial as having the sovereign deal with their problems responsibly and hopefully as true statesmen before you let it go beyond where it should be. And by that I mean, you know, we need to get back to doing some of the hard things that we need to do to make sure things are sustainable and affordable, and have address those problems that need to be addressed and not tip over those situations that are beneficial.
You mentioned a long forgotten policy off air when we were talking about a rainy day fund.
Right.
Gosh, that seems like that's just common sense.
And, you know, so often the common sense traditional things that we've done, we find reasons to attack it, saying, why do you need to keep those funds? Why are you taxing more than you should? The reason why is revenues have always been choppy. We've had business cycles and economic cycles. Things go up and down. That's why you have it. And municipality, state, and local governments have been sort of driven away from rainy day funds because people felt that was evidence of overtaxing.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was good management.
I think that was, I'm pretty Republican. I recall President Bush talking about that we're going to be giving back your money when there was a surplus. And looking back, at the end result of the tax cuts, it probably wasn't the best idea. We maybe should have had some surpluses.
Well, and I think that the real call for everyone, and I think, everyone recognizes this, is we have to do the right thing. We don't want to overtax, but we don't want to undertax either, because we want to pay our debts. We want to make sure that the burdens and obligations that have been accumulated aren't passed on to our children and our grandchildren.
A state, okay, I'm just trying to get my arms around, what is a state, when it has a negative budget deficit like California does, it's really not, it's not employees of the counties or cities, but they have their own, their own band of problems as far as promises for people that are working for the state, same type of systems as a CalPERS, that type of thing?
Right. You have state employees paid by state taxes in California. Education has the first priority, then their general obligation bonds, and then they have a series of priorities by Constitution for the payment of their debt. If there isn't enough funds, what unfortunately traditionally states do is they slow pay, which sometimes is very similar to not paying.
Okay, or given you, didn't we get an IOU at some point?
Yeah, you had an IOU, and then the SEC said you need a prospectus. It's security.
Okay.
They had to stop the IOU. But, I mean, states as a sovereign, and one could even question whether the federal government SEC should be talking anything to a state, which is a co-sovereign. You know, but I think they were talking about the security laws, which they have jurisdiction over. But generally, the states can come up with creative ways of dealing with it. It all gets back to how do you create benefits for your citizens? Giving the best education you can, which will attract employees with an educated workforce, looking for those opportunities. And I think we have sometimes emphasized benefits without the meaning of the benefit. By that I mean the benefit is better municipal services, better improvements, but without saying, how do we get there? We get there by making sure we educate our citizens, We provide job opportunities for our citizens, and we help them help themselves get to the level that they want to in society. And so often it's creating that education along with business and providing the educated workers for business that have helped communities grow and prosper. And wherever we've fallen from that, once you start losing that benefit, you start losing taxpayers, you lose business, and we really get into a very difficult situation for a municipality.
Wall Street has gone through the 1% episode, and in a smaller sense, I'm wondering if you're a citizen of a city and you're looking at the benefit package of somebody that works for the city, do you feel that there's some resentment building in that sense to where, you guys have really gotten a pretty good package and we're about to get less services than we thought we were deserving of, and the cost is going to be greater for even those services? So does that set up sort of a little animosity against people that are actually, they're providing the services?
Well, to some degree, asking for more than you should get is self-defeating.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean, if you're not going to provide the services, if it isn't going to be that energetic municipal body, state or local, that is providing the jobs, the education, the stimulus to make people want to live there and be there and raise their family there, then long-term, you're not sustainable and affordable, and it's all going to fail. And so the secret of success for a state or a local government is maintaining and growing, and it isn't to reduce benefits or make it less attractive or raise costs beyond which can be afforded.
Is there a likely adult in the room, let's say? In other words, is there a mechanism, and you, I think it was part of what you had written, a sovereign debt resolution mechanism, an SDRM. Does that exist, or is that just something you're suggesting should?
I think it does. I think to some degree, we have talked about this. One of the debates with the workers and with the taxpayers and with the elected officials is what is sustainable and affordable? Let's agree on these are the essential services that we need to provide, and this is the cost. We have to pay that first from a priority standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the cost of that? What can we pay workers based upon that level? And what can we pay in pension benefits based upon that? And what's sustainable and affordable? We don't want to undertax people because that's unfair, to the workers and to others. But we don't want to overtax them because, as we said, people will move out. And so the first thing is coming up with a quasi-judicial body that's going to make a determination about this is the type of recovery plan, this is the type of budget that is sustainable and affordable. And then, either through appropriate discussions, negotiation, mediation, and arbitration, have people come to that voluntarily or enforce it as a determination and make it stick. Because at the end, you need or else you can do it voluntarily and it may be better for you, or else we'll determine what it is and you have to live by it.
And I guess that what you've just said is that within the power of the Chapter 9 bankruptcy as it exists now, that there go ahead.
No, what you can do is you can turn the Chapter 9s into the prepackaged plan as we used to have for corporations, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the or else determined by this quasi-judicial body, this authority, this government protection authority, makes those determinations and then can enforce it through a Chapter 9, which would be a quick, as you remember from the corporations that use prepackaged bankruptcies, they could do it in 30, 60, 90 days. They'd be done.
Okay.
And the benefit of that is you don't have to pay all the costs and expense of going 3 years.
I forget what it's called. I think it might be McKinsey. There's a report that comes out quarterly, and it rates the debt of countries, which ones are in trouble. Well, Greece is completely off of the bad list now. It's not even in the top 10. And I just thought that was very interesting. And I guess my question is, Vallejo, Do they have a credit hit? Are their ratings down or their cost of credit up because of a bankruptcy?
Well, I think that's the biggest fear. How do you go back to the market? And what do you say to the market when you go back to them?
Yeah, there's that statement backed by the full faith and credit of that has to mean something.
Right. And it's hard to say this time I mean it.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the unintended consequences of any of these actions not to pay people what they thought they had already earned. And that you can't really afford to go down that road. So then, therefore, we have to figure out how to be as honorable as possible and pay people what they're supposed to get. In the appendix of your report, you have some charts, and I'm a big fan of charts. And one of them just struck me because you showed the bankruptcy filings over a course of a long period of time from 37, and then you kind of broke it down. And I just, off air again, we talked a little bit about this, that during the inflationary years, that was the cleanest time for any bankruptcies. Seems like cities did very well when interest rates were completely nuts and inflation was very high. Why did that happen?
Well, it's sort of counter-cyclical. I mean, when you're in an inflation period, you know, obviously revenues, income tax, sales tax, real estate tax are more. So the tax revenues are coming in. The municipalities are not having the problem. And then when you get to the time where people lose their job, where businesses have a tough time paying their bills, let alone their taxes, and values fall, you wind up getting less. And meanwhile, your costs keep on going up at somewhat a standard rate. And so that's why, you know, you find municipalities sort of in their troubles and problems, follow economic downturns rather than our lead indicators.
Okay. So we could use a good bout of inflation.
You know, I mean, as a high tide raises all boats, as we talked about.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that, you know, well, when we're trying to manage to low or no inflation and very low interest rates, there are consequences, not only to seniors and their investments, but there are consequences elsewhere. Obviously, inflation has ravages, you know, as we've seen in Germany in years gone by and in other countries, and no one wants to create that kind. But, you know, some inflation is not necessarily bad.
The years that we're in right now, if we compare that, you have a chart that compares the Great Recession years and the Great Depression years as far as ratio of state and local debt to GDP.
Right.
And we're certainly not there, but where are we in, let's say, some other, did you look at any other charts and say, okay, we're definitely worse than we would have been, let's say, in the 90s recession, that type of thing?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, we're, you know, actually our last downturn on a GDP basis were half of the problem that was during the Depression, which is sort of an interesting comment. People thought it was a lot closer. I mean, the 90s and the 80s were very much, you know, if you look at by unemployment and so forth, obviously, you know, in the early 80s were not very dissimilar to where we are today.
No, actually, the filings, too, and we're down to 40 seconds. The filings for Chapter 9 were very high in the 80s.
Right. And that was because we're suffering some of that pain. And I think I think the real question now, because I think we've you know, there isn't a lot of cushion left. And remember, from the 80s, you had rainy day funds. You had a lot of surplus that municipalities had. You had still had growth in communities. And we, you know, and to the degree communities now have aged even more and are less susceptible for growth, whether it's in the Rust Belt or elsewhere, I mean, those are the types of problems where we need to recreate, regenerate, and hopefully renew so that we come up with a very viable city or municipality going forward.
Jim Spioto, I really appreciate you taking time and your expertise to clarify some of these issues, and thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.